Bienvenidos a un nuevo episodio del podcast de K-Fan, un espacio en el que aprender de emprendedores que han creado, escalado y a veces vendido empresas tecnológicas.
¿Quieres potenciar tu cartera invirtiendo como los mejores? Ahora puedes con Crescenta. Somos la primera gestora digital para invertir en los mejores fondos de capital privado del mundo, desde 10.000 euros hasta tickets de millones. Regístrate en crescenta.com y accede a las oportunidades de inversión.
Good morning, everyone. How are you, Jorge?
Very good. How are you, Jaime? I'm excited.
All good. All good. Are you going to talk more in this podcast than your first one?
I mean, I don't know if people even I hope they don't remember my first appearance. So yeah, I hope I talk. I've already talked more than the first appearance.
I think your first appearance was something like, you know, like the Hollywood stars when they sometimes talk about their first appearance in a movie, and it was like not even like a secondary character, but like someone who showed up in the background with doing something silly. Not that you did something silly in the first one, but this is like Jorge's great unveiling, I think.
No, but that was literally, yeah, the definition. This is the first proper podcast that I'm on. So yeah, very excited, very excited.
Thanks. So Jorge, who are our guests today? Who do we have on?
Our guests today, we have two very interesting people. First, we have Gita Benjirun, and sorry for my pronunciation, who is a data analyst at Baringa and just graduated from UCL in a Bachelor of Science in Management Science. And then we have Mary Benjirun, who's Chief of Staff and Investor at One Rec Time and has previously been at other funds such as Hardcore Capital and Capcore Invest. And he's probably one of the most renowned, young VCs in the European scene. So basically, why are they here today? Well, because they're respectively president and founder of BabyVC. So let me start with you, Mary. What is BabyVC and how did this all start?
First of all, thank you so much for the invitation. It's actually good to be back on a podcast. Last time I was on a podcast was probably a few years ago, so I'm happy to be with you today. So BBVC started out in 2009, and I was in my first years of master's, and I had this chance to have a VC course. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and I stumbled upon this course, which was really interesting. Some finance, some startups, but I found out that my professor was teaching it with an academic point of view, and I was like, this is not how VC should be teached.
Did you say 2009?
2019, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that old.
That's what I thought.
Okay. And I was like, you know what? I want to talk to those VCs, understand their job. That's probably what I want to do with my life. But I thought that if I pinged some VCs on LinkedIn, they're going to be like, who's this 100 guy pinging me? I don't have time for a 30-minute coffee. And at the same time, I had some friends back in Paris at The Family. I don't know if you remember this incubator, very famous in France. And every Saturday morning, they had an 8-week boot camp with entrepreneurs at The Family. And they had Xavier Niel coming, a lot of CEOs coming. And I was like, okay, this group of 20 people each Saturday morning, they have the opportunity to meet the best founders. Why isn't it possible with VC? And there was nothing in VC back then. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to find out people who want to build this project with me, create this new community, create this bootcamp, and see what's popping out from there. And for the story back at uni, I didn't get the chance to find a spot in a society, an association, you know, when you're a new master's. So I had this rage to do something, to meet new people. So everything combined made BBVC happening. And what happened is that originally I found out my co-founders by putting a post on LinkedIn. Two people answered me. We started out from there. It was November 2019. We were three people working on it. In March 2020, we had the first session of the bootcamp, and then COVID hit. And what we originally thought was going to be an impediment to our effort was actually a very strong tailwind, in the sense that because people were stuck home doing nothing, all the 20 people that we first hired to work with us on BabyVC on the first bootcamp, they actually helped us on the construction of the bootcamp and the community. And I'm really happy because 4 to 5 years later, Baby VC is now a bootcamp that is present in 5 countries: France, the UK, Germany, Spain, Portugal, now Italy, with more than 400 alumni. All the VCs have participated in. We have the chance to have a lot of alumni that have joined the best renowned funds such as Partech, Curazeo, Alven, Early Bird, etc. So we really built Baby VC because there was no transparency in school regarding this job. You had one VC class, but not more. And we really wanted to fill this gap by giving young people, tomorrow's investors, tomorrow entrepreneurs, some material to learn about venture capital. Sorry, I talk a lot.
No, in GitHub, basically, you're who's running the operations more in a day-to-day now. So where is Baby VC at right now, and where is it going to be in, say, short, mid, long term, whatever you want to explain here?
Yeah, I think as Mehdi said, it was a small group of 20 people at the beginning, and 5 years after, it has become a community of 300 members across 5 locations, and we don't count to stop there. I think our objective is really to demystify VC, but also to bring a new voice and to kind of redefine the industry by helping people within the community to share their thoughts and explain how it's actually happening in the inside or discover it. And so we want to continue to go across Europe in other locations, build this diverse ecosystem. That's the first thing. And we're not just a bootcamp. So we also want to continue to develop our newsletter, which today has more than 6,000 followers. And through which we share weekly news on tech and recent investments. But we also want to, again, as I said, bring new voices to the table. So we're producing some new sort of contents. We recently did a series of masterclasses and a special newsletter on everything related to impact, because many things happened at VCs, but we don't really hear about it. So that's the That's the intent we want to bring to the table. And then we also want to be more present at industry events, to participate to different conferences. Last year, we hosted a roundtable at Bits and Pretzel, and it was a great start. And now we want to continue to do that at different locations where we now are. And I guess it's really about continue to grow this ecosystem and continue to enable people who want to hear how it's really in the inside to give them this information.
Sorry, go ahead, Mehdi. Who was it?
If I can just add to that, I think that now in 2024, we're really at this stage of development of tech and where talent goes, that 10 years back, people would, after uni, go to those MBBs, McKinsey, consulting jobs, etc., banking. Now, with all the surge of new startups and this growth of the VC ecosystem, one of the key role of Baby VC also as well is by all those bootcamp, all those resources, is to actually give access to information to all those people that would traditionally go to traditional jobs. And now they would go to like startups, scale-ups, or VCs. And we are really conscious that there's not enough offer in VC. There's limited amount of VC firms. There's limited amount of new full-time jobs every year. But we're convinced that by bringing people around the same table, around the same masterclasses, some would actually want to do VCs, some won't. But I really feel that the other ones would be more inclined to go to startups or to start their own ventures. I think that even if there's not enough VC jobs, it would bring people to other VC or startup related jobs.
Mm-hmm. And there is also, just at the final thought, it's many people think that this is just possible if you have a business background, and it's actually really not the case. And that's really one of the things that we want to emphasize at Baby VC. And that's why we try to have cohorts that come from different academic backgrounds and really give them with the bootcamp, you know, the key foundations they need to then access the key roles. So
One question that I had, so for people like listening to this and trying to understand a bit better how BBC works, could you explain a bit what they can expect within the bootcamp? How does the bootcamp work?
Sure. So the bootcamp is a series of 10 masterclasses, either in person or online, in each of the 5 locations. And the curriculum is built in a way that you kind of touch upon all the different topics you'd consider important in the life cycle of a fund. So we would start with a key introduction to what is VC, and then we'd touch on how to build a fund, what sourcing screening is, the key topics of, you know, due diligence, term sheets, and then we'd go more into what are alternative ways of funding a startup, and how can VC provide value to the founders, and then exits. But what's really, really cool is that there are 2 investment sessions that are like challenges, and where we really actually give the fellows the opportunity to act as if they were investment analysts. And we give them the chance to actually source the startup and try to pitch them as if it was a real investment committee, or to work on an investment memo. And it's I think it's really an experience that they value, because then they feel better positioned for interviews, for example, or for future jobs. So that's how the bootcamp runs.
And how long does it run?
10 weeks. And each session is 1 hour and a half, although it often lasts a bit more because all the speakers have a lot of insights to share. And we try to bring very diverse speakers. Many are quite senior because we want them to share their experiences, etc. But we also have a few junior people that can sometimes share also their own experiences with the fellows.
And if I can just add to that, so because it's like an exclusive community, we run the bootcamps twice a year. So between February and March, and between October and November, each time, each location at the same time. So you have 2 opportunities per year per country to join the bootcamp, and we accept 20 to 25 people on each promotion.
Exactly. And I wanted to touch on one thing that you both have remarked throughout these like first few minutes, but like the mystifying VC, VC is an opaque business, like when we want to give access to all this information, why do you feel like it is so difficult for more junior people, maybe not so much now, but like throughout these past few years, for more junior people to have access to these VC opportunities and to understand what VC is?
Well, I don't know if you remember your classes in master or your classes at uni, but personally, I don't know how it was for you. I didn't have any understanding of VC. I've never heard of it when I was in uni, except for this short module that I accidentally picked up in my program. But I think that people, when they think about finance in uni, they think about M&A and private equity, but there is a lack of understanding of how the venture capital asset class is within the private equity bigger asset class. And we're trying to change that by doing it organically at BBVC, but I think that one of the main goals is to give this opportunity to like the universities to play this role as well, and to put more VC classes, more entrepreneurial classes into their modules.
And also another question that I wanted to ask, more so always from a junior's perspective, there's the people that say that you need to do something else first in order to bring that experience into VC, which is more so, I guess, the Gita's case. And then other people that say, if you start off investing from the very beginning, right after college, like no background experience whatsoever, you'll master this craft earlier. So that which is more so more like more Medi's case. How do you see your case and the other case? Like what are the pros and cons that you find in each of the cases?
I think it can help, but it's not a prerequisite at all. And I can expand on both cases. The skills you'll learn and that you'll need in VC, you can learn them through those experiences that you mentioned, IB consulting and other stuff. But you can also learn it just by like in other courses and by growing your career in VCology. I think I'm currently working in consulting, and that's teaching me so much. But it doesn't mean that if I wanted to transition to VC now, it would be a key differentiation point with maybe other people that have great experiences, because it's teaching you skills like being analytical, like being great at problem solving, being great at soft skills, communication, networking, which are all very key for VC. But I think it's also something you learn elsewhere. And for example, the key foundations, you can learn them in formations like, for example, the bootcamp. And then what VC are looking for these days are some people that have more personal experiences and backgrounds, because then they can bring that to the table. So people that are applying with different academic backgrounds, they do have something to bring to the table. And I think it's an important point. I don't know.
As for me, I think there's no single form of truth. There's no one single answer to this. You can be the best VC if you haven't started your own company, you haven't worked in a startup. You can be the shittiest one as well. And you can be the best one if you've had like a former operator background. So I think it really depends. I think it depends as well as what type of VC job are you doing. I think that there's 10 ways of doing VC. Are you doing VC for a pre-seed fund where you need to analyze the founder? You're like, hey, I want to invest in this company because this guy has so much drive because his father didn't go to his football classes when he was young. You can do VC as a seed investor who's taking 2 months to sign a term sheet and to write a 150 pages memo. You can do VC as a growth investor and digging into the Google Sheets and the business plans, etc. So there's no single form of truth. It really depends how you're doing it. But I think that when you started as a junior, even if you haven't done it, if you shadow the partner, work closely with the lawyers on the term sheet, work closely with the partner as a board observer, etc., you learn on the ground. So for people who want to start right off, if you want to do it, just do it now. Don't expect, don't just do like a consulting job or M&A job just because it's going to open up the doors. Just do it right away, I think.
What do you think, Jorge? I mean, you've been at this for a year and a half. Do you wish you had gone to a startup or something different before joining KFund? You can be honest.
Nah, I'm loving it for now. But it is true that at some points I'm like, hey, would I be doing this better if I had been somewhere else before? But I don't know. For the time being, I think I like what I'm doing, and I think like my basically how I'm focusing it is the right path. It's a difficult one to ask. I want to ask you too, Jaime, because you also came from a non-traditional background into this world.
Yeah, so I mean, basically I worked in journalism before doing this, and then I had like a brief stint for like a couple of years in a social media agency doing analytics and reporting, and then I've been at KFund for 8 years. I agree with what Mehdi says. I think there's many ways to do it. I do think that at some point, I do think it's useful, even if you join VC out of school, at some point doing like a few years at a company. Yeah, not necessarily as a founder, but as an operator and joining like a startup or a scale up if you want to continue to be in the technology industry. Not just because of the empathy that it can give you with the founders, but also because of the knowledge that you can acquire. And then, because I think that, for example, one of the things that we need to do as VCs, or that you can try to do as a VC firm, especially if you're at the board level, is give advice to entrepreneurs. And I think that if you haven't gone through it, I think it's very tricky to give advice, and you can give advice based on what you read, not on what you experienced. And obviously, I mean, you can have a lot of knowledge 20, 30 years down the line, but especially in the first 5 or 10 years, if you start giving advice to founders at a board level, it's probably going to be, let's put it lightly, like unfounded advice. So I think, for example, one of the things that I've tried to do in the first five, or even in the first 5 years, but even today, is when an entrepreneur needs advice at the board level, or just because you're trying to manage the company from the VC perspective, from inside the VC firm, is like, if you don't know something, just be humble enough to say, well, I don't know about that. And just say, well, I don't know about that because I haven't gone through that. But one of the things that you can do as a junior person at a VC firm is just like try to build like a very large network of people around you, and not just other VCs, other junior VCs or other people at VC firms, but operators, founders and stuff like that. So when that question happens from the founder that you manage or that you try to help manage, just say, well, I don't know about that, but I can put you in touch with this three other, I don't know, VP of engineering or CTOs or VP of sales or that kind of stuff. So people who have gone through that and have those guys give the advice instead of you giving the advice. Because I think it can be kind of tricky.
Yeah, I completely agree. You can open doors with your network. It's really more relevant at the partner level because you're in touch with like the C-levels of a large corporate that can open up some good partnership, good revenue streams for you. But at the junior level, it's true that as a way that you can support the founders, if you're in contact with them, is not necessarily to connect with the VC analyst around you, but as well, like people working in other stuff, you know, like the founders you're talking about, people that are decision-making people in the potential clients, etc. So I think that there's many ways to offer support except then advice from a former operator or former entrepreneurial background.
And I think to add to that, it's really important to show like where you want to go. And as you said, Remy, that like if you're a junior, you have things to learn, but there are definitely ways to get there. And for example, if you start as an intern, like it's a great way to build your knowledge for when you'll be a full-time junior VC, for example. And then the support you'll need, you'll get it because you're an intern. And I think it's really important to show that, like, get there with your foundations, know what you're going to interview with, but you don't need to know everything from the start. That's the point of an internship.
Yeah.
And we've touched on networking quite a bit for junior VCs, but what else do you think, and this question I guess is for the three of you, like what else do you feel are the traits or the characteristics of a person that you'd say, hey, this is the person that fits the perfect junior VC role? You go first.
Happy to go. I think one of the key things is you need to be curious, and you need to go look for meeting new people or discovering new potential deals or potential startups. And because you're a junior, you need to want to grow yourself as a person, right? That's a key thing. And it's kind of linked to being proactive, like get yourself out there. I think it's a key one. I think you need to come with some key things, like, and like understand what VCs are. For example, with things like the bootcamp or with resources you have a look at, and then just try to develop also your soft skills. Like we said that, but communication is key, networking is key. Interest for innovation is key. So I think it's one of the key part of the skill sets for a junior analyst.
For me, if I would say, I think that because you're dealing with so much in, let's suppose that you're in a generalist funnel, but let's suppose that you're dealing with so much industries that you're not originally related to, that you're dealing with so many companies that are doing so many things different. I think that's one of the most interesting skill, I think, is to build a conviction and to communicate that conviction to your partners that are the final decision makers. But it is your role to actually dig the most deeper into the company, its industry, the market, its business model, why it's a good potential exit, etc., why it's a crazy team, etc., and to build this conviction and to communicate it, because I think that's the only thing that you can actually do to do your first deal.
Yeah, I think one of the things that like has been imposed to me the most, or like advised to me the most, is the storytelling part. Hey, if you don't create a narrative through which this would make sense for us, this is not gonna go farther. So you need to do that in order to reach all the milestones, in order to do that first deal that you were mentioning, Mary. And also this I guess it's more for Mary probably, but what do you think are the main learnings and main skills that you get as the first few years in VC? Like what would a person that's just coming into VC expect to get for these first couple of years?
Interesting. Well, for me right now, it's interesting because contrary to the first year where I was in VC and I was just looking at the startups and the entrepreneurs, now at the moment currently I'm really more focused on the fundraising, and I'm seeing a part of VC that I haven't touched before on my previous internships, and I really see that VC is such a small asset class in comparison to private equity, buyout, everything else.
No.
Sorry?
Real estate, I was saying. No.
Real estate, everything, you know. And we actually, because I work with a lot of family offices, private banks, etc., that have like a 5 to 10% allocation for their clients, you understand that you really need to educate the market and you really need to educate the people who want to invest in the venture capital asset class as an LP. And you see the VC industry different than if you see it as a simple investor that doesn't have like an LP role in his job desk. And you're the one who gets no's at the end of the day, contrary to the investor that is telling no to the entrepreneurs.
Jaime is pretty immersed in that as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So as I said before, I've been a K-Fund for 8 years, but I think I've been more involved in the fundraising process, especially in the last year. And I think, I mean, I totally agree with what Mehdi says. I think it's quite interesting. And I think it's actually more interesting, going back to what we were discussing before, if you don't have like a background as an operator or startup, and you don't know what it feels like being said no like 100 times, when you're fundraising, I think it's like trying to fundraise and talk to LPs to raise funds for a fund, it's a very humbling experience because you're going to get pretty much, well, a larger number of no's probably than startups get. And the process is much longer than sometimes a startup fundraising. So I think it's quite insightful. And one of the other things that I found to like a lot about the fundraising process is that, as Mehdi says, I mean, if you're trying to raise from family offices, corporations and stuff like that, or even former founders, you're talking to people who have done it before or who have had success before. So I think besides the trying to sell your fund or your strategy and stuff like that, just getting to know the background of the families or of the entrepreneurs of the corporations, I think it's also interesting just for learning purposes.
How do you think this relates for both of you that you're doing this right now, that this relates to actually analyzing a company and actually meeting these entrepreneurs? So is there a big difference? I mean, sometimes it's the same person, but like what's the difference between these players that are both very relevant for a VC firm?
For me, I think there's like a comparison that you can do with the founders. If you really want a deal, you build a relationship with the founder really early on. You try to like hit on him for like a few months, a few years before he's coming to fundraise and he's coming at you. And I think that for fundraising, it's the same. For some LPs, you need to build the relationship very early on, especially if you're raising a first-time fund and you haven't built a track record and you need to convince the LP in front of you that you're going to repeat the successes. So I think that you need to build relationships, work on them, nurture them, and at some time, like probably someday it will work. But this is the comparison that I see.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree with that. I think the more we do it, the more we realize it. I think like raising for a fund or fundraising and talking to LPs, I don't think it's very transactional. I think it's very hard to meet someone for the first time and then a couple of weeks later just say, hey, could you give me 1 million, 5 million, 10 million? I don't think it works like that. So you need to build trust and a longer relationship.
My last question, and then we can either, if you have anything else to add or if you want to jump into the last two questions, it was more so what are... How do you think Baby VC prepares you for these first? So we are talking the whole time about access of information, basically showing you the whole, like the whole value chain that a VC process goes to and so on and so forth. But what's the secret sauce that Baby VC gives you in order to excel at your first VC job? How do you see that this?
I think it starts with the foundations, with the bootcamp, right? It gives you this first understanding of these are the key things you need to know if you want to interview for a VC or if you're going to work in VC, right? Then it gives you some practical experience you can train during the challenges. But then you also have access to a community that's huge, and anyone you're going to reach out to is going to be helping you if they can or if they have been there before. That's really something that people value a lot. There is a mentorship program which became global in the recent series of bootcamps. And again, the feedback is that it's really, really valuable to actually build a one-on-one relationship with your mentor and to be able to ask all of the questions you have in mind, and to do, for example, mock interviews, etc. That's a key thing. You have the newsletter, for example, that's helping you to stay up to date with the news. I think it's a combination. There are also we try to be present in different events, and that's also a key thing to develop in the future. So I think it's a combination of things in the short term when you enter Baby VC, but also anytime you need to have help on a specific topic, you can help or you can find that in the content we've done in the past. And one of the things we want to develop is also to produce more content on specific topics, and notably about VC interviews and all of the amazing insights we've had in the past, kind of put that on something we can share with more people. And that's one of the things we work on this semester.
Yeah, I think that community is really one of the sound pillar of Baby VC. And I think that as it started out originally in France in 2019 and only expanded in Germany in 2022, right now, in whatever bootcamp you join, when you join, you have access to like analysts, like entrepreneurs, operators in like six different countries. And I think that's a kickstarter to your network that you wouldn't find anywhere else on any other platform. So I think that's a really good thing.
And to add to that, I think it also gives you some sort of first credit or first badge of approval, if I could say, because we've had many people that participated in the sessions that are always saying they're impressed by how fellows are, you know, interested, asking right questions, etc. Or even when we reflect with a few people that have hired people from Baby VC, they're always really satisfied by those applicants, sometimes compared to those that are not. So it's something that's really, really recognized in France now, and that we're trying to also make sure it's also recognized in the other locations.
And also, if you look at the career side of it, if we look at the career side of it and we think about like, if we think about the career side of it and we think about how VCs are looking for their new interns that are potentially their new full-time analysts or associates, if we look at the numbers, in each session we receive on average 200 applications and we only select 20. So that's like a 10% rate. And for VCs, when they look for the new intern or like full-time, seeing that this person has been part of BabyVC, it's like a sign of trust that we can give them because the person has already been trained. It has been selected among 200 other people. And they spend, I wouldn't say they spend less time on interviewing, but at least they know that it's more likely that they hire someone great.
Mm-hmm. And I now remember what I was going to say before, so we don't need to edit things out. I was going to say about the fundraising process, I think. So I was going to say that it's highly subjective in my mind. I mean, obviously metrics matter and performance that you have as a fund matter a lot. But in the same way that, for example, very early stage investing startups is highly subjective when it comes to convincing a VC or for the VC to build a thesis around a team or and around a product or a company, I think the same happens with VC, with a relation with the VC LP relationship. So it's a lot about creating empathy and having that kind of luck from a subjective standpoint, where you actually that actually helps you convince like an LP to invest in your fund. And another question that I wanted to ask you before we wrap up, before we started recording, we briefly chat about the sustainability of BabyVC in the future. I mean, how to make sure that BabyVC, obviously from an economic standpoint, is here for the next 5, 10, 15 years. So could you guys talk a bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, when I started out BabyVC, I was... a student and I was an intern and I really thought about BabyVC as a one-off, as a joke, doing it just for fun. And then we did the second one just for fun and a third one just for fun. And then we realized, hey, there's something going on and there's like a longer term project that could be viable. We didn't have funds, we didn't have sponsors, nothing. And we ran out of €0, except that we asked people to pay like €69 to do the bootcamp. Now people are not paying for it. It's totally free. So we're very proud of that. In 2021, I decided to back off from BBVC and have other people running it. So it was really, really important for me to know that even if me and my two other co-founders were not part of the project, there was always some people who would roll it. And right now, I think that on the organization side of things, the model is that when you join a bootcamp, when you finish it, you have the possibility to manage it. And the goal is to have people work from it when they're interns or when they're students and to have it for the most time possible. And from a financial perspective, I think that one of the key business model that we can have if we have a strategic project that we want to implement that require fund is that because we're modestly bringing a lot of value to VC funds who have better interns and who have, higher quality interns, I think that we want to ask VCs to help us finance this by giving a small contribution, probably a monthly, yearly 1K or 2K fee. This could be viable, but we have a head of partnership that is running that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are many opportunities to explore that we're currently doing, and we're currently looking for sponsors for our bootcamp. So reach out if you're interested. But as Mehdi said, I think the community is sustainable by design because like it's always been the case that people are organizing the next bootcamps and way more. Now the fellows or the alumni suggest new initiatives for themselves, but also for the community whether it's the internal or the external community. And it's really because I think they see the value for Baby VC, but also for them to help them grow professionally. And so I think, yeah, that's also a key thing.
Interesting. So last two questions that we ask every single guest. Can you recommend us a book or some form of content? And can you also suggest someone to invite to the podcast that hasn't been on before?
Sure, happy to go first.
Go.
I think one of the books I read very recently that I really liked is called The Business of Belonging by David Spinks. It's a book that was recommended to me by someone in the community, actually. And I found it very interesting because it shows you the power that a community can have, as I just mentioned it. And it shows you that if you know how to actually bring value to your community, then they are going to be the one bringing value to the rest of the group by themselves. And it's really interesting to understand how to do that continuously, how to make sure that they know what they're signing for and that they're happy with that. And also how to try to reinvent when there is a need to do so. So that's really a book I'd recommend. It's applicable for businesses that make profits out of their community, but it's really also applicable to every company or organization that has a community. That's the first thing. And then a person I would recommend to talk to is Masamba Sangor. He is an amazing person that I met at university. And he was actually one of the speakers on the VC program, the first one I did that actually interested me to look more into VC. He's one of the young VCs that's always willing to help, always there at all the events. He participated already two or three times to sessions here in the UK. And he's been working at MMC for a while. And he now transitioned to a founder associate role. But he's an amazing person to talk to because he's seen a lot. He's good experience, and he's always willing to share and spend time with you.
As for me, I would really, really recommend, well, it's kind of a nerd book, but it's Anti-Fragile from Nassim Nicholas Taleb. It's actually a book that it shows you how to gain from disorder and chaos while being protected from fragilities and adverse events. It shows you that when bad things happen to you, it can actually make you anti-fragile, meaning that you benefit from bad events. And I think that you can really learn how to behave and thrive in a world where you don't understand what is too uncertain, where you don't really see the certainties. And I really recommend you to read this book. He's the same author of The Black Swan. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's a book that tells you that sometimes there are very, very unlikely events likely to happen, such as the COVID when it hit in 2020. By giving an example that, let's take the example, it's a bit nerdy, but let's take the example of a turkey that has lived all its life in a farm, and one day, bam, it gets killed, and this is like a totally unlikely event in its life. There was no previous event that would tell her that it's possible that she get killed, and it happens. I really, really like that. And the question was like someone to know. I really like, I mean, it's a bit nerdy, but I really like Peter Attia, the author of Outlive. He's like a doctor from Stanford who has worked on a book called Outlive, and it actually gives you the difference between the lifespan and the health span. The lifespan meaning how long can you live, and the health span being how long can you live well. And it gives you some resources on like how to eat, how to work out, and like how to work on your mental space. So check out Peter Attia.
Peter is a celebrity. It'll be difficult to bring him on. That is true. Well, thank you very much, both of you. Thank you, Jaime, for letting me appear here.
You deserve it, Jorge.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
guys.
Very, very, very interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.